The 19th of February, that is the date that my next Top 50 online program starts. So if you want to work with me and my coach Emma over the next 12 weeks to help transform your physique, whether that's men or women's building muscle, toning up, losing body fat, or a combination of all three, send me an email, brian@briankeenfitness.com, or head over to my website, www.briankeenfitness.com, and just click on the contact, and I'll send you all the information on the new Top 50 program that is running for 12 weeks and includes all the new recipes that we built, the challenges alongside the weekly Q&As and check-ins Monday or Friday with my coach Emma. So looking forward to working with you on the 19th of February. Enjoy today's podcast.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness to share tips about all things that can support you on your journey to becoming the best version of yourself and build a bulletproof mindset to get whatever you want out of life. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode, I'm going to pool questions from Instagram and Snapchat. So if you're not following me on there, my Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, I'm spending a load of time on there with DMs and on Instagram stories. And my Snapchat, BrianK019, where I'm trying to open that up every day for a Q&A back and forth. So if you're not following me on there, they're probably my two most active platforms at the minute. So be sure to check those out. And any questions that are coming in, particularly over the next couple of weeks, are going to be all based off Instagram and Snapchat. So any ones that you have, you can send them in directly on there. Okay, so first question comes in from Frubby Stubbs on Instagram. How to get back into training after being sick? So I have a couple of ways to approach this one. They say your mess becomes your message and to learn from the mistakes of others. And the truth is, in my early 20s and mid-20s, training when I was sick was probably one of the biggest mistakes that I used to make. Again, it's not healthy for anybody else being in the gym when you're sick, because you're only going to make other people sick. But even when I was 22, 23, if I felt run down or I had a cold or a flu, I used to try and train through it. And the truth is, and the reality is, it's probably the worst thing you can do, because training is a stressor on your body. And I've spoken in other podcasts in the past about cortisol and stress in the body. It's cumulative. It doesn't matter where it comes from, whether it's from your boss yelling at you, or, you know, a relationship that's going badly, or stress in the gym. You know, your actual physiological response will be slightly different, but cortisol and stress all adds up. And when your immune system is run down and you've been sick and you've had the cold or a flu, it's something that can get progressively worse if you train through it, and it just prolongs you. And it's the figurative taking one step forward and then taking two steps backwards, where you feel a cold or a flu coming on. And one of the rules that I work by, and I'm not necessarily saying that this should be your rule, but the thing that I do is neck up I train and neck below I don't train. So if I have a runny nose or a sore throat, I tend to train through it and work at 70 or 80% of my maximum. And if it's neck below, like a chest infection or a cough, it's something that I tend to completely take a break from. So one of the things when you get back training after being sick is normally one of two approaches that I use with people that are coming through my programs. One is that you wait until you're at 100% recovery rate, where you feel yourself again and you feel great, and then you go straight back, balls to the wall, training at full intensity. Or alternatively, you wait until you're at 75-80%, and then you go in and train at 75-80% and see how your body's responding. The truth is, it's very much down to a personality type. I get a massive serotonin and mental kick when I train. It's my release in terms of my meditation is training, and it allows me to feel so much better and clearer in the day. So if I've been sick for a week, I'm dying to get back to the gym, or I'm dying to get back training and doing something physical. So when I'm at 75 or 80%, I tend to go in and do a lighter workout, just more to get myself back into that routine. Even if I'm not going hell for leather in the gym, it's still mentally giving me that break that I'm back training. Other people, and I've had people come through my programs that relapse if they go back to the gym at 75 or 80% and for whatever reason their immune system is suppressed because of not sleeping well or their work environment, or some people that may be starting in the program that haven't got the nutrition dialed in yet, and you can relapse back that way. So it very much is down to knowing yourself and what works for your body. For me, I know my nutrition is good. I'm getting all the micro and macronutrients that my body needs. My recovery and my sleep is very, very much on point every night. I'm getting my 7.5 hours every night. I'm falling into those REM, rapid eye movement sleep cycles. For those of you who read my book, The Fitness Mindset, it's more about the quality of sleep that you get more than the quantity. Like, you can get 10 or 11 hours sleep and feel more tired than when you went to bed. But if you get 6 hours of high quality sleep, when you drop into those 90 minute REM cycles, particularly when you wake up after a REM cycle, you can wake up feeling fresher and more recovered. So I know that I can go back to the gym at 75, 80% and I'll recover to 90, 95, 100% over the next 2-3 days as long as I don't train too intensely that first day back, whereas other people can relapse. So a bit of it is knowing yourself and knowing how your body responds, but that's generally one of my two approaches, and I would trial both next time you get sick and see. You know, if you relapse after going back to the gym too soon, you know you gotta wait till you're at 100% next time. So best piece of advice is ease yourself back into it, see how your body responds, and if that didn't work for you, wait until you're 100% and then go back balls to the wall, hell for leather, the normal training intensity that you work at. Okay, next question comes in from Patrick Craig 20 on Instagram. How many days a week should you train? Should it be between 5 and 7 days? Okay, so again, similar to the first question, there's a couple of ways to answer this. In terms of training volume that you're doing, in terms of days that you're in the gym, there's a lot of factors that come into play. I am of the believer that you can physically overtrain, and it is 100% a real thing that you can get central nervous system fatigue or over muscular fatigue, where your gym sessions start to suffer and you just can't get any mind muscle connection with the body part you're trying to train. But it's very, very difficult to do. One of the things that isn't difficult to do though is under recovering. So what I find with a lot of people is that when they think they're overtraining, they're not actually overtrained, they're under recovered. So they haven't been sleeping enough and getting the recovery that their body needs. A lot of your recovery comes when you drop into deep sleep, or their nutrition is off, or their supplementation isn't geared towards recovery, and that's an area in their nutritional plan that they're lacking. So for example, things like your glutamine, your zinc, your amino acid. Glutamine is one of the first amino acids that gets deficient in people that train at a high intensity level. So that's why a lot of people supplement their glutamine back in, even though it's naturally recurring in most amino acid sources, complete protein sources that you eat, your chicken, your fish, your beef. You may not be getting the level that you need because it's one of the first amino acids to get deficient. Zinc is very, very similar. It's the mineral equivalent of that. So one of the first supplements that I put back into people's programs if they're starting to feel run down or under recovered is going to be their zinc to keep their testosterone levels a little bit higher. So there is that under recovery aspect. On top of that, then it's very hard to say that 5 days is the best to train, or 4 days is the best to train, or 7 days is the best to train, because it depends on what program you're following. You may be doing an aerobic program 3-4 days a week. Like, you could potentially run every day and drop into an aerobic zone, and provided you don't have any issues with your ligaments or joints or your knees, ankles or tendons, you could potentially run every day or swim every day and not have any negative effect on your body. But if you're going in and lifting maximum weight, or you're doing a bodybuilding program or a powerlifting program, or you're doing high intensity sessions on a pitch, if you're an athlete or a footballer or a hurler or whatever your sport is, then it's very, very easy to overtrain or under recover. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play. I found for me, the sweet spot is around that 4 or 5 days. People coming through my program, particularly my general fitness program, so people looking to lose body fat, tone up, build muscle, generally that 4 or 5 day a week is normally optimal for a couple of reasons. One, it fits into people's lifestyle and schedule. It's a lot easier to get a routine where you do Monday to Friday with the weekends off, or you do 3 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on, 1 day off, and you repeat that cycle. It's a lot easier to build it into your routine. It also means that you keep your training intensity higher because you're getting those rest days that you need. What I always found for me, and this took a lot of trial and error for me, if I go to 6 days a week, I normally train, you know, 4 days a week minimum, 5 days sometimes, and sometimes 6 days if I need to get an extra run in. For example, I'm training for the Marathon de Sable now, which is a 256-kilometer race to the Sahara Desert in April. And I may have missed a couple of runs during the week and I need to make up my miles. So I may do a sixth day now. So it depends on the alignment with your goals and making sure that you build your training program around that. But the truth is, it's very much down to the quality of your workout as opposed to the quantity that you're doing. You're way better off, and when people come in through my program, I prefer them hitting 4 sessions a week or 5 sessions a week where they're hitting it at 100% intensity, they're in and out of the gym in 50 minutes or 55 minutes, and their quality of their workout was good. They're tearing fibers down, they're elevating their heart rate, if fat loss is a goal, and they're doing all the things that they need to do that's in alignment with whatever the specific goal is. My athletes, my GA players in are on the opposite side. If they're on the pitch 2-3 times a week, they're going to be in the gym slightly less, and they'll be focusing more on the recovery strategy, particularly coming into preseason, coming into league games, and just making sure that their body is peaked coming into that. So again, it has to be in alignment with whatever your goals are. There is no one size fits all. If there was a one size fits all in terms of how many days we train, then everybody would train that amount of days and everybody would recover perfectly and everybody's body would respond either in composition or performance or whatever the goal is. Best piece of advice I could offer is, one, understand the under recovery factor and realize that it's normally not overtraining but under recovery. And then two, find your sweet spot where you're not losing intensity. For you, that might be 4 days a week. You know, if it fits into your schedule and you're able to train 4 or 5 days a week and that's what your body's responding to best, then that's going to be the best training strategy for you. I've had single mums come through the program that are really, really short for time that need to be only able to do home workouts that are 40 minutes or even 20 minutes in some cases, 3 days a week, because they don't have people looking after their kids at other times. They've got tremendous results because we dialed in their nutrition and pulled back the calories slightly because their output wasn't as high. So you can get amazing results on less days. I've had other people go up to 6 days because they were training for a triathlon or training for a marathon and they needed to get their distance in, or that they just used it as a mental space because they felt better when they trained 6 days and they also got tremendous results. So there is no one size fits all. Experiment with it. Understand the under recovery protocol and system. Make sure that you're not under recovering, and then apply what amount of days works best for your schedule in alignment with your goals. Okay, next question comes in from Daryl Nulty on Instagram. Hey Brian, can you go over your investing, spending, wasting time and money thing from Snapchat, please? Okay, so this came up on a Snapchat Q&A recently. BrianK019 is my Snapchat, where I spoke about the way that I look at time and money, and they're very, very interchangeable in this context, that everything that I use for money or time, I look at it in either one of three ways, that I'm either investing it, I'm either spending it, or I'm either wasting it. So if we're using time as a context, every decision that I make normally is in reflection and working back and reverse engineering what the end goals are. So I have my 2018 goals, the numbers that I'm working towards, the goals that I'm trying to hit, the things that I'm trying to achieve, and everything that I'm doing and the decisions that I make and the days decisions about how I lay out my day structurally in terms of what I need to get done on Monday, what I need to get done on Tuesday, normally all funnels into what the end goal is for the end of the year. So the way that I look at my time is, am I investing my time, am I spending my time, or am I wasting my time? So in terms of investing time, I always think of things like books, listening to podcasts that are informing you and educating you on whatever your goals are in this moment in time. For me, I listen to a lot of business podcasts, a lot of economics podcasts, investing podcasts, because that's where my area of interest is now in terms of where my life is. 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was all fitness, nutrition, training, consumption of information that I consumed either through magazines, there was a little bit of podcasting back then, or videos on YouTube, because that's what I was trying to inform myself and build my knowledge on. So that's investing your time. Know what the end goal of the person you want to be is, whether that's financially. I break my life into 4 quadrants: health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. Health, your body, the way you feel, your energy levels. Wealth, your bank account, your love, your family members, your relationships with people, your relationship with your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, whatever that looks like for you. And fulfillment, so the getting and tap dancing to work every morning, the writing books for me, podcasts, interviewing and networking with certain people who I can help provide more information to people who are following me and serve as many in much ways as I can, which is effective with the podcast, is that's investing time. So everything that feeds into that, videos that I watch, podcasts I listen to, books that I read, seminars I go to, the conferences I attend, are investing time to what the end goal is. Then the next one is spending, which is kind of like you're in between. So it's the thing that you want to do because it allows you to switch off, but it doesn't necessarily give you any return in terms of that health, wealth, love, or fulfillment. It doesn't really enhance that in any way. So for me, I love watching movies. Cinema is one of my favorite things to do, particularly when a new movie comes out. I love spending time watching some classic movies, particularly some of my favorite ones. And I'll rewatch things like The Big Short, The Wolf of Wall Street. I love that movie as well. Some of the olds, Lord of the Rings, even the older ones that I was always into. That's spending time as opposed to investing, because you're not getting anything back on return on that. You may be getting a little bit of R&R and relaxation and rest, but you're not investing. You're not educating yourself or moving any way forward or closer to the end goal. And then the last one then is wasting time, which is when you're fucking flicking through your phone on stupid shit on social media, where you've spent 3 hours looking at Instagram. And I'm aware of the irony that I built a large platform on my Instagram, my Snapchat, my Facebook. But when you're wasting time just flicking through, or you're reading a magazine or a book that talks about fucking nothing, one of those OK or Now magazines that aren't providing you with anything, but if anything, they're actually shifting your mindset in a negative way and making you see the world in a more negative way by pulling things into the front of your mind that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise. One of the examples I always use is, I remember speaking with a client of mine once, and she was talking about how she thought her boyfriend was sexting other girls. And I was like, where did you hear about that term? She goes, oh, I read about it in Now magazine. And I'm like, well, fuck's sake, it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you've seen it in a magazine and it's brought to the forefront of your mind, what the fuck are you going to see when you look into a relationship? So normally one of two things happen. You start seeing things that aren't even there, or it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because the way you behave and the way you show up and the way that you change starts pushing the other person away. And it did. Effectively, it did. That relationship ended and she came back to me, and I was, again, offering a couple of objective advice. It's very easy for people on the outside to offer advice, you know, like one of the things that I'll regularly hear from people, and I've done it myself, is if we could take our own advice, we'd be much better off. But when we're tied emotionally to a situation, it's very, very difficult for us. It's the figurative forest amongst the trees. You can't see the forest amongst the trees. And what happens is you become so emotionally attached to the situation that you can't see it objectively. So it's very, very easy to offer advice from the outside. But that is my concept and thought process of spending time on things that are wasting time on things that are actually having a negative impact on your life. They're not making you a better version of you. You know, this is where I have my love hate with social media. I spoke about this on my recent interview on the Ben Coomer Radio podcast, that I have a love hate with social media because I love what it's done for the world in terms of connectivity and your ability to follow people who are helping and supporting you and educating you and making you become a better version of you. But you have to guard that, because you can follow people that are actually doing the complete reverse. They're providing a negative stimulus and they're making you feel worse about yourself. And again, I always offer it myself. I put myself in that bracket. If you're following my channels and I'm not supporting you becoming a stronger version of you, and it's not helping you on a consistent basis, by all means unfollow me, because I don't want to be a part of you becoming a worse version of the person that you could potentially be. But I adore, I hope, and I implore you to hold everybody to that standard. You know, Tony Robbins says, raise your bar, raise your standards, and you've got to hold everyone to that bar. And social media is the exact same. So be very, very wary, because that's the catch-22. Because things like social media, particularly, are the equivalent where they can be investing time and they can be making you a better version of you, but they can also fall into wasting time. So be very, very careful and make sure you guard against that. And again, money falls the exact same way. Every decision that I make, every penny that I spend, I tend to look at it in one of three ways. Am I investing my money? Am I spending my money? Or am I wasting my money? For investing, it's me, is the traditional sense, the areas where I put my money into different, you know, cryptocurrencies were a bit more hit or miss, but things a bit more stable, like your real estate and stocks. Investing money, books, seminars, conferences, spending money on that. I never base things off price. I base things off value. price is what you pay, value is what you get. And when you start to see the world in terms of not the price you pay for things, but the amount of value that you're going to get, is it going to cut your learning curve? Is it going to help you become a stronger version of you? Is it going to improve your energy, your health, your wealth, your love, your happiness? Is it going to support you? If it is, then invest your money in that, because it's going to come back to you tenfold, either in a monetary sense or in a lifestyle or fulfillment sense. Spending is the same. Going out and spending money, and again, the cinema is a great example that I use. I'm never getting that money back, but I'll happily go to the cinema every weekend or every second weekend with my daughter and go see whatever the new kids movie is, because I love spending time, even though that's investing in our relationship. The actual monetary sense is just spending money. I'm not going to get it back. That 20 euro you spend is not coming back to you. Where you invest 20 euro into something else, into a book, you're going to get a nugget of gold back, and you'll probably see that return on investment in 20 euro. And then wasting money is your stupid shit. You're fucking 200 euro a watch when you could have done with a 50 euro watch when you had money that you needed to spend on something else. That's wasting money. And I'm the first one to say, the things that you like and that are important to you, by all means spend your money on them. You know, one of the philosophies that I use in terms of spending money and investing money is, would I buy this if nobody else was watching? And then I make my decision based out of that. Because when you tie a lot of ego, and I've had my own issues, and it's something that I've continuously deal with and had to deal with over the last several years, where your ego constantly jumps in. I love Ryan Holiday's book, The Ego is the Enemy. And where your ego constantly comes in when somebody says something and you fire back and you're like, oh, why do they say that? Or why do they think that? And it's down to an ego of caring about what they think. And spending money on or wasting money on certain things can be the same. So, you know, I always put it down to things like, would I train if nobody was watching? I would 100% train if I lived on a desert island. I would train, I would do some form of push-ups and pull-ups because I like the way it makes me feel and it gives me more energy. Would I drive around an expensive car if no one was watching? Probably not. I'm very fortunate. I have a nice car. I have a nice house. I have all of these things because when you're providing value and helping people get what they want, you get everything you want. But in terms of would I do it or buy it or consume it or have it if nobody was watching? Probably not. So one of the pitfalls or one of the systems that I use myself when I'm about to waste money on something that I don't really need, I ask myself, well, would I buy this if nobody was watching? And that normally helps me make a decision because there's an opportunity cost in everything that you spend. Opportunity cost is an economics term. It's when you spend money on one thing, it means you can't spend money on something else. So for example, the opportunity cost of, you know, doing one person's gym program means you can't spend that money on a pair of shoes that you want or a dress that you want or whatever it is that looks like for you. And that opportunity cost shows up everywhere in terms of spending money. So I tend to ask myself that question. If I spend money on something that I don't really need now that I could have invested elsewhere, invested back in my business, invested into a book or an audio book or a seminar or a conference or a course or a mentorship or a program that would have helped move me forward, you start weighing things up and seeing them differently. And that helps a lot. So I tend to base a lot of my life philosophy in terms of time and money, even though I value time way more because you can make more money. My time is my most precious commodity to me. It's the one thing that I protect. I love Seneca's book, The Shortness of Life, where he speaks that life isn't short, it's just that we wasted focusing on stupid shit that we don't need. Not his exact words. He was a Greek philosopher 2,000 years ago, so they're not his exact words, but he effectively talks that when you prioritize the things that are most important to you, life is long as you spend it doing the right things. And time is the commodity that I won't trade for anything that's not important to me, whereas I'll trade money and I'll take a chance and I'll take a hit on something if I think it will potentially pay off or I think it'll make life easier or it'll support the people around me, whereas I won't trade up my time. So that's probably the only difference between time and money. But in terms of the way I see it with investing, spending and wasting, that's my philosophy on it. So I hope that helps and provides a lot of value to you, Dara, and anybody else who's in a position where that might have been able to help them as well. Okay, next question comes in from DQZek on Snapchat. What's more important to lose body fat, eating a calorie deficit or keeping your protein high? So the truth is both are important for different reasons. But in truth, you by just getting into a calorie deficit, it's probably going to support the end goal faster than even keeping your protein high. But I'm going to approach this from a couple of angles and flesh it out a small bit just to give you a bit more context. So when you say losing body fat, it's very important to understand, I've spoken about this in the podcast before, losing body fat and losing weight aren't the same thing. Losing weight is when you reduce the number on a scale. Losing body fat is when you reduce the fat on your body. Unless you're overweight or obese to begin with, you don't really have to worry about the scale number as such. It's more about your body fat that's climbing down and your measurements that are changing. But in terms of losing body fat, when you get into a calorie deficit, for those of you that don't know, a calorie deficit is just where you're eating less calories than your body needs. So for example, if your maintenance calories, the amount of calories you need to eat to stay the same weight, is 2,000 calories and you eat below 2,000 calories, you're in a deficit. If you eat above 2,000 calories, you're in a calorie surplus. So the theory and the basic science is that if you drop into a calorie deficit, you'll lose body fat or lose weight faster. And the truth is that is 100% accurate for the most cases. I wish your body was as simple as 1 plus 1 equals 2, and if you dropped into a calorie deficit, you'd 100% drop body fat, but that's not necessarily the way your body works. There's lots of other things that come into play, your hormonal responses, genetic factors, the actual quality of food that you're eating. Like if you're eating a calorie deficit of Pop-Tarts and chocolate, your body fat may not climb even in a deficit. You know, your body fat may not reduce even in a deficit. But if you're eating it with good quality foods, good complex carbs, healthy fats, quality protein, your body composition is going to change faster. So in terms of which one's more important, probably a calorie deficit. But keeping your protein high also is important for a couple of reasons. Now, you can still reduce body fat by not having your protein super high. But one of the advantages that you have with protein is it's the same kilocalories per gram as it is per gram of carbohydrate. And it takes more calories for your body to break down a gram of protein than to break down a gram of carbohydrate. So your 1 gram of carbohydrate is 4 kilocalories. 1 gram of protein is 4 kilocalories. 1 gram of fat then is 9 calories, and alcohol is 7 calories. So for example, when you have a higher intake of protein, your body actually has to work harder to break down those grams than carbohydrates, for example. So it can slightly stimulate and elevate your metabolism, which means you can potentially burn more calories throughout the day. But where the gold really comes in is your lean muscle mass. When you have lean muscle, and this goes for all goals, whether your goal is to build muscle or lose body fat, you want to maintain quality lean muscle. And there's a little bit of a misconception, particularly in the female community, in sometimes where they think muscle, they think big jacked up bodybuilder. Muscle by its definition is super lean. When you see a girl who looks amazing in a bikini body, she's lean. She's got muscular tone. And what happens when you have muscular tone and you have that lean muscle, your metabolism is elevated because your body's moving around that amount of muscle, which means that you need to eat more food or increase your calories or eat more calories just to move around. So when you have lean muscle and you build, or you're following a program that's tearing fibers down, and then you have your protein higher and you're able to repair the fibers that you've torn with the amino acids you're consuming from protein, you can potentially elevate your metabolism and have a leaner muscular frame, which means you burn more calories throughout the day. So that's where the advantage of having protein higher can come in. So in terms of, as I said, which one's more important, probably a calorie deficit if you had to choose, but the real goal is when you combine it. And again, high protein is relative. For some people, it's a gram per body weight or kilo of body weight. For some people, it's 2 grams. It really varies. Lots of different factors. Some people are going to have a worse inflammatory response with it higher. Other people are going to digest it really well. It depends on each person's genetic factors, hormonal makeup, and a lot of different training strategies that you may be applying on the amount of protein and amino acids that you may require to repair from workouts. So it's not, again, a one size fits all, but in terms of losing body fat, number one is going to be getting into a deficit, and then number two is definitely keeping your protein high enough from good quality sources, your chicken, your whey protein, your rice protein, your fish, and making sure that you're factoring that into your overall calorie intake. Okay, next question comes in from PattyNo10 on Snapchat. Should I do cardio before or after weights? Okay, so again, like most training or nutrition questions, it's very important to know what the end goal is. One of the things that I regularly say on the podcast is you can't hit a target you can't see. So it's super important to know what your goal is. A lot of the players that I work with in my GA program, the Lean GA Lean Body program, you can have everything that you want to achieve in terms of building more muscle, getting the six pack, getting faster, getting stronger, but you need to know what the end goal is. It's the same as someone coming through my normal fitness top 50 program. If you know you want to build lean muscle and you want to lose body fat so that your bum is bigger or that your abs are flatter or you have a six pack and you know what the end goal is, you can reverse engineer your training program, nutrition plan, and the supplements you're using to hit that end goal. So the same is with cardio and doing it before or after weights. If body composition is your goal and you're trying to build muscle or you're trying to lose body fat or you're just trying to change the way the composition of the muscle so that you look better, I'd probably advise doing it after for a couple of reasons. One, weight training, resistance training is generally harder than traditional cardio, particularly if you're doing low intensity steady state cardio, less cardio, where you're working at 70% of your max heart rate. It tends to be a little bit easier to do that cardio. So when you do your resistance training, your weight training first, and it's harder on your body, you have a higher output and you're able to train harder for a longer period of time. When you do the reverse, you can fatigue yourself a small bit from the cardio and then your resistance training or weight training can suffer, so you don't get the same bang for your buck in the same time. So if you're trying to lose body fat or you're trying to change your composition, I'd probably do your resistance training first for quality reasons. There's also the old scientific studies done on your glucose, glycogen, and body fats that if you're doing resistance training, it can burn through more glucose, which can burn through your muscle glycogen, which means that you can get into your fat stores faster. So when you're doing your cardio, you can potentially tap into your fat stores faster. That's also worth considering when composition is the end goal. However, if you're training for an endurance event where you're trying to build up to a half marathon or a full marathon or a triathlon or whatever it is, and that's the primary goal, then it may be worth doing your cardio beforehand because you want to make sure that you're hitting your numbers and working your aerobic system so that you're able to hit that end goal of the endurance event. You may do some strength work or accessory work, hypertrophy after for compositions that you look a certain way, but your goal number one is performance. So whatever the goal is, reverse engineer your training program off the back of that. If you're trying to change your composition, then you're going to do your resistance training probably first and then do your cardio after. If you're training for a marathon, it's really important to get your run time down or to build up your aerobic capacity so that you're able to hit the distances you need, then you're going to do your cardio first and then do your resistance training or weight training after. So again, whatever the goal is, work backwards from that and then do your cardio before or after weights depending on that end goal. Okay, next question comes in from Anonymous. I used to have a thing with my housemate, but he put a stop to it. Now, every time I get drunk, I get really upset or do something stupid. I don't want it to be awkward in the house because we're really good friends, but we can't enjoy going out together anymore. What should I do? Okay, so I'm going to try and offer an opinion and advice on this one just because variations of this question come in pretty regularly in my Snapchat. And as I said, it's very easy to offer advice when you're objective on a situation. And even though I don't have all the context on this, I'm still going to try and provide value so that it helps. Because I know it's a really common thing for people. I would probably do one of two things first. I would get very, very clear on where you stand in a sober sense on the whole thing. Because what happens sometimes with alcohol and when you get drunk is it tends to break down the barrier of the way you're really feeling, and it tends to just kind of numb and shut off that part of the brain of rationality, and it lets your emotions take over. So sometimes, not always, but sometimes it can bring up the way that you're really feeling. So I would get very, very clear on how you feel about your housemate in reality when you're feeling normal during the day, and then what you do is going to be based out of that, because it's going to be one of two things. Either that you're really into your housemate and you only let yourself feel that way when you get drunk, and you may use it as a subconscious or conscious excuse. A lot of people do it, and you'll see them where they feel embarrassed around another person and they'll consciously go out and have a few drinks because they want to talk to that person or they want to tell them how they feel, and they just don't have the courage, the old Dutch courage. And they will make sure that they have a couple of drinks, and they have one of two things then. They can either have the courage to go up and say it to them, or they can use it as an excuse if it goes badly. They can say, oh, I was drunk, I was upset because I drank too much. So I get very, very clear on that first. Richard Feynman has a great quote that I live my life by, where he says, don't fool yourself and you're the easiest person to fool. So I would get very, very clear on your feelings towards your housemate before you make any decision. Because when you do that, the advice I'm going to offer was going to be different depending on what response or what answer comes back when you figure that out. So the first thing is, if you find that you actually have something strong with your housemate and you do feel that there's something potentially there. Living with someone can be very, very complicated in terms of particularly the situation where you had a thing and it wasn't just a hookup or a one-night stand, where there was a casual thing and then someone put a cut to it or put a stop to it. I know in this case he did, but in some cases it can be the other person, it could have been you that did it, and there's that awkwardness that kind of builds. If there's a genuine thing where you want to proceed and see where that relationship goes, then it's very important to make your feelings clear and see where you stand with him. Like one of the, I put this in the mindset section of my book, one of the worry and anxiety that tends to build up in people is the not knowing something. You know, it's so funny because I've read a couple of good books, a really, really good book that I'm reading at the minute, The Biggest Regrets, The Five Biggest Regrets of the Dying. And one of the things that regularly comes up is when people are going for tests for cancer or from some disease, it's the thought of not knowing that degrades them, that makes them break down. And then when they actually find out, well, look, you've got 6 months to live, all that weight gets taken off them. And it's very, very similar in the context of relationships with people. When you don't know where you stand, that's where all the stories in your own head start to build up. You get inside your own head and you can't see the situation objectively for what it really is because you don't know where you stand with that other person. So I would find out if it is something that you're into and you want to pursue it further. I would literally lay it out with him sober and say, look, I really like you. I think there may be something here. Can you tell me where you stand with this? Because one of two things will come back. He will come back and say, look, I feel the same way. Let's maybe do this sober and see if it goes somewhere. I've seen that continuously happen with people. But he may come back and realize, look, what we had was, you know, cool for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but I'm actually seeing somebody else, or I'm not into pursuing this any further. And then you know that it's time to move on, because the not knowing is what kills us. It's in all areas of life. And that's why I love that book that I'm reading, because it gives context to how you do anything is how you do everything. And when you know, you can make decisions based out of it. And I would imagine a lot of your not knowing and that awkwardness now is not knowing where you stand. And it's the same in a job. It's the same in a relationship. It's the same in a family context. It's the same in anything we do in life. When we don't know where we stand with somebody, there's this unease, there's this discomfort, and it's down to conflict avoidance, where we don't want the conflict or we don't want the discomfort of the conversation that needs to be had. And sometimes the analogy that I like to use is when you go into the gym and you lift a weight and you're pushing past your comfort zone, because training's fucking hard. Like lifting weights is hard, it's uncomfortable, particularly in the beginning when you're getting used to it first, it feels uncomfortable. But your body changes and you feel stronger and you get stronger and your composition changes because you're working in that discomfort. Your mindset is the exact same. Your happiness is the exact same. Your life is the exact same. When you start having those conversations that you're avoiding and you start leaning into the discomfort of the conversation, you can see where you stand and you feel happier out the other side. And also you end up having a stronger relationship with the people that you breach that boundary with, because all closeness and intimacy breeds closeness with people. So I would have that conversation. And then on the flip side of it is when you have a think on it and you realize that, you know what, I'm actually not into my housemate at all. You know, what we had was cool, but it's just awkward now and I get upset when we drink. I would literally start breaking down how you really feel. And if that's the way you truly feel, what'll happen is when you start going out drinking and you start consuming alcohol again, you realize that, you know what, I'm getting upset for no reason. I'm not even into this guy. It's the situation I'm upset with. I feel embarrassed because of the awkwardness in the house. And you may find that it has nothing to do with the guy, it's the situation, and you're afraid that the people in the house are talking, or you're afraid that your friends are, you know, having a conversation about what she had and where's it going. And all that can breed discomfort in the way that you feel. So before you do anything else, it's super important to get clear with how you feel, because how you react and the decisions you make are going to be based off how you feel in reality, whether you're actually genuinely into your housemate or you're not into him at all, and then making the decisions out of that. So again, I hope that helps, and I hope anybody that's in a similar position in any area of their life, with a family member, in a relationship, in any context where you don't know where you stand, it's have that conversation. Because the truth is, one of the things, and I put this in my book, and I still have to do this and reevaluate it every couple of weeks or every month, what conversation are you avoiding? You know, that's the one you need to have. So what I would ask, and anybody that's listening to this right now, ask yourself, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling worried, if you're feeling stressed out, if you're feeling on edge for any reason, ask yourself, What's the conversation you're avoiding? Because the one thing I can guarantee is if you have that conversation and you start approaching it, that weight will lift off your chest because you'll know where you stand. And it's funny because when you think of the worst case scenario, in 99 out of 100 cases, it never ends up being that bad. And it can reduce a lot of anxiety and daily worry purely by having the conversations and finally knowing where you're going and who you're going with and what you're doing, as opposed to making up stories in your own head and thinking about the worst case scenario and then never doing anything about it. So again, ask yourself, and if you need somebody, and I know sometimes these are delicate situations and questions and you just need to put it out there verbally, by all means, send me that question. Put it on a piece of paper or put it on a Snapchat or an Instagram and send it to me as a private message. You can send it and say, what's the conversation that you're avoiding? Because sometimes when you see it written down and you can send it to somebody, it just takes that weight off your chest and it's the first step towards going to it. And I can assure you, if I open them, I'll keep them private and I'll reply to the ones that I can. So sometimes that might even help. So if that helps you, by all means, send me a DM, send me a Snapchat and ask, what's the conversation you're avoiding? What situation are you avoiding? And if you don't even want me to reply to it and you just want to send it, by all means, do that. And hopefully that helps. So that's everything from today's episode. So a little bit of a longer one, a couple of extra questions in there. So I hope you got a lot of value from that. Please hit me up and let me know what parts of the episode you liked, what did you dislike, what other questions would you like to see, and any feedback you give. I base everything I do on the podcast off of feedback. One of the reasons we've been doing so many Q&As is because that's what the feedback has been. People saying, thanks so much for answering that question. I got a lot of value from the girl that sent in that question. I'm in the same situation. So be sure to let me know on DM, on Instagram, hit me up on Snapchat, and let me know what you like. Let me know what you dislike. I'm not emotionally attached to anything that I do, and if there's stuff that I'm doing that you don't like, by all means let me know, because that constructive criticism can guide directions of what content I put out and what questions I answer and what way I can provide value and serve and help in any way that I can. So for more information on me, you can head over to my website, briankeenfitness.com. My Snapchat is briank019. My Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube is all Brian Keen Fitness. Massive thank you for listening. Looking forward to everyone hitting me up on DM and Snapchat. Catch you all soon.